Okay, I thought this was apropos. I can't spell apropos, but it sounds good. Let's talk here on a Thursday. Again, Scott with you. We're going to learn some things. I think Jackie here is going to embarrass me with information like I had no idea about that. We're joined in studio, or I'm joined in studio, by Jackie Esposito with the Center County Historical Society. And first off, Jackie, good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Oop, might help if I turn your microphone on, all right? There's an event you're doing on Sunday that I caught wind of, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago or whenever it was, and I thought, ooh, there's a subject that would be kind of interesting. And we'll talk about the subject here in a little bit. And again, folks, you're going to learn some things, I bet, like, I had no idea about that. Who was that guy? You know, all that stuff. But, Jackie, let's start from scratch, if you would. You're with the Center County Historical Society. So, first off, tell us something about you and maybe your background, and then tell us something about the Historical Society.
Okay. Well, right now I'm serving as Vice President of the Center County Historical Society. I retired from Penn State after spending 35 years working in the University Archives. The University Archives and archives in general are repositories for collecting and processing unique and rare materials for research, for genealogy, for historical documentation, but primarily for memory development. I like to refer to it similar to Dr. Seuss's Lorax. The Lorax saves the trees. Archivists save the voices of the past, who was there, what they did, how important they are. And so because I was working in the archives at Penn State and became a specialist in Penn State history, I worked very closely with the Historical Society. So when I retired, I started working with the Historical Society, which I had been a member of for a long time, in their archives and helping preserve their archives and their historical materials. Libraries, museums, archives are important memory institutions. And there's a lot of history in Center County and probably a lot of underappreciated history in Center County. And one of my focuses is to make sure people learn about it, to make sure people go to the events and understand what the work that's being done in these institutions and value the history of the county. The county has an amazing amount of history.
Yeah, you've been a member for a long time. For regular listeners of the show, I've mentioned I love history. I wish I was a history teacher and so on. Idiot here has only been a society member for a few weeks. I don't know. I was asleep at the switch, Jackie, for 40 years until recently. And so I can't go Sunday because this event apparently is sold out, if not sold, signed up, maxed out on Sunday. So what are you doing on Sunday?
I'm doing a presentation called Penn State History Through Its Presidents. And so what I'm going to do is to look at all 19 presidents and its first principal and discuss how Penn State was born, how it grew, how it changed, and what the individual presidents did that help to form and formulate the Penn State that we know today. It's 170 years of history. It's a big chunk of Center County history. Penn State was founded in 1855, and it actually predates the founding of the borough and College Township. It talks about, the presentation talks about not only the presidents and what they did, but how the university has changed, the impact the university has made in the Commonwealth, the impact it's made nationwide, worldwide, and what some of those landmarks are.
It's interesting, Jackie, via a friend on social media, they shared a simple map of Center County from like 1835. And Bellefonte is very prominent. Mm-hmm. Milesburg is there. I'm from Penns Valley. Milheim is there. State College is nowhere to be found on this map.
College is not incorporated till 1898.
How about that?
So the university precedes State College. And actually, a great many of the activities in State College at the time it was incorporated were student-focused. So they were hotels and restaurants and stores to help support the students at the university.
Now, Farmers High School. All right, there we go. But, I mean, Jackie, there was not even a blip on the map where State College is supposed to be. I mean, there was nothing there. So before the Farmers High School started, mm-hmm. all right, we're sitting in, well, technically, I guess, Ferguson Township or whatever. What was here before the Farmers High School started?
Iron furnaces. The center iron furnaces on the land that was donated to create Penn State. The area was well known for its iron furnaces and for the creation of pig iron. It was a, as the railroads got bigger and bigger, it was a transport area to take pig iron to places that would then make it into steel. So it was agricultural. It was a place for iron ore, and it was a place for many agrarian activities.
But was there a town?
It was a small town. And, you know, for the iron workers, it was a small town. Bellefonte was definitely bigger. Bellefonte was more important back in the day, and that's why it's still the county seat. Actually, it's responsible for six governors being elected, and it was extraordinarily important. The town itself, the campus itself, is based on a donation from Moses Thompson and James Irvin, who were the iron masters. James Irvin donated 200 acres to start the Farmers High School, and then eventually donated another 200 acres, and the family itself supported the college in many ways, including sitting on the board of trustees, being a part of the management. John Hamilton was the business manager and treasurer for many years. So if you look at the history of the family that lived in the Center Furnace Mansion, they were largely responsible for helping to bring the college to central Pennsylvania. I will dispel a myth.
Okay.
Penn State was not put in central Pennsylvania so that it was away from everybody else in the middle of nowhere. This area was chosen because it would be a good place for students to learn scientific agriculture. And that was the focus initially of what the Pennsylvania Agriculture Society wanted to do by establishing Penn State here in central Pennsylvania. They wanted to focus on scientific agriculture and mechanical arts. And it would be for the children of the citizens of the Commonwealth. And so they specifically chose central Pennsylvania. There were other areas, including Philadelphia and Erie, that wanted to have the college. But the Pennsylvania Agriculture Society chose central Pennsylvania.
But in the 1850s, where we're sitting was essentially the middle of nowhere?
It was, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it was.
But the educators thought that would be a good way to make sure that the students concentrated on their studies. That said, they did take them on road trips. I mean, they routinely climbed up Mount Nittany. They routinely went to Bellefonte and Lewistown and other areas to do work and to do studies. I mean, student life back then was very different. In 1859, when the first students came to Penn State, the students started at 6 o'clock in the morning. They worked on the land.
Ooh.
They did agriculture. Oh, you don't think students get up at 6 o'clock in the morning now, huh?
No. Ooh, okay, keep going.
No, they worked on the land. Then they came in and they had early morning studies. They had mandatory chapel, mandatory military drill, and then they had more studies afterwards. They had their big meal at lunchtime. And then it was lights out at 8 o'clock. Which we know doesn't happen anymore. but it was very rigorous. But it was also a very different time frame. They would start in February and then have to end the semester in May so that the students could go back to be on their family farms and stuff like that. The average age of a student in 1859 was 15, 16 years old.
Mm.
And it was very much, and one of the reasons it was called the Farmers High School originally, it was post what we would consider high school preparatory for college. And the first president of Penn State, Evan Pugh, who's known as the original founder of Penn State, immediately had the name change to the Agricultural College of Pennsylvania. He hated the name Farmers High School. And it only kept that name for a little while. In 1874, the name got changed to the Pennsylvania State College, and it stayed that until 1953 when it became the university.
All right. Now, again, Jackie, I'd like to think I'm a student of history, all right? 1859, first students show up. Obviously, 1861, start of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
What effect did that have, if anything, on the school?
Well, it had two effects. Fortunately, the school was far north enough that we weren't being directly affected by it, but the students who were here wanted to go down and fight. And President Pugh, who was a Quaker, did not want them to go down and fight. He felt that a student should be educated before they entered the military. And he often would go to the Bellefonte train station and bring the students back and tell them and tell their parents that he wanted them educated before they went and joined the war. Now, that said, there were students who left and joined the war. Monetarily, it affected the...
This is a statewide required monthly test of the emergency alert system originating from the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, Harrisburg. This is only a test.
Yeah. And now Penn State has in excess of 88,000.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a little more than 116. Yep. How did somebody get in? I mean,
had to send in an application. Right. It had to be sponsored by your school principal. It's one of the funnier pieces of documentation in the archives, the Penn State archives, are the actual form letter applications that were created as early as 1857. That you would fill out an application and you would submit it. You would have a letter of recommendation, and it was reviewed by then the principal, and then. Once there was a president that was hired then by the president and the faculty.
All right. So Evan Pugh is the first president of Penn State. And if I recall, he was only president for like 5 years, I think it was.
Yep, he was actually president for 5 years. He was also the youngest president. He began when he was 32 years old. And unfortunately, he was in a carriage accident going between Bellefonte and State College, kind of over by where Spring Creek is over there. And he developed typhoid, and he was very sick and eventually died from the complications of the carriage accident. There's an argument to be said that he actually worked himself to death because he was working very hard at the time to get Penn State to be the recipient of the Land-Grant Act funds. Abraham Lincoln had established the Land-Grant Act, which gave funds to colleges that supported agriculture and the mechanical arts. And Evan Pugh was working nonstop to make sure that the agricultural college was named as the recipient of those funds. He was successful. He didn't know that, though. He had died before that was approved by the legislature.
Now, would this be over the top, Jackie, from my very limited knowledge? If there had not been an Evan Pugh, we wouldn't be sitting here. You and me today wouldn't be sitting here. None of this would be here.
Well, there's an argument to be made that way. But it's not just Evan Pugh who made sure that the college succeeded. The man who's known as the second founder, the man that took the Agricultural College, the Pennsylvania State College, off the brink and established the kind of curriculum, the kind of programs, sports, that we know here is George Atherton. He's known as the second founder. He was the longest running president. He was president from 1882 to 1906. And he's known as the second founder because he had a vision. He had a vision of what the college would look like. And he was responsible for raising funds for new buildings. He was responsible for establishing fraternities so students would have their own houses to live in. He was responsible for a lot of curriculum changes. And during his tenure, intercollegiate athletics was established as well. He is probably one of the bigger influences in identifying what Penn State should look like and would probably recognize how it has grown into a research institution.
Now, we'll take a break in a moment. I'm going to guess, would it be right, Jackie? Most people, this is going to be an interesting presentation you're doing on Sunday because most people, they don't know any of these guys or any of these people.
No, actually, they probably do because most of the streets downtown are named after Penn State presidents.
That's it. That's
and usually when I do this presentation, the first eight presidents, are people going, oh, that's who that street's named after.
Yes.
So we have Evan Pugh's first. He was a chemist. We have William Henry Allen for Allen Street, General John Fraser, Thomas Henry Burroughs, Reverend James Calder. Reverend James Calder is always interesting to me because he brought female students to Penn State. Oh. The first classes of students were men, and in 1871, James Calder brought female students with him from Hillsdale College, and they were the first female students who graduated in 1873 with degrees in civil engineering. Joseph Shortledge, whose term as president was the shortest. He was only president for 9 months. Then we have George Atherton. And then you get people like Edwin Earl Sparks, who brought liberal arts to Penn State. John Martin Thomas, who supported the first major fundraising campaign, and it was to build buildings. Ralph Dorn Hetzel, the student union building.
Yeah.
He actually is responsible for the expansion of the campus system because he was president during both the Great Depression and the Second World War. And he believed that if you couldn't come to campus because you didn't have the money during the Depression, campus would come to you. And he set up centers. He set up four centers around the Commonwealth to bring educators to the citizens of the Commonwealth. Milton Eisenhower, whose brother was president of the United States.
I remember him, yeah.
While he was president of Penn State. Eric Walker, who helped to negotiate for the land that became the Hershey Medical Center. John Oswald, who actually was from Philadelphia and then came up here. Bryce Jordan, of the Jordan Center.
There you go.
Multi-million-dollar fundraising campaign for scholarships and buildings and professorships. He's responsible for bringing us into the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
Joab Thomas, Graham Spanier, who's probably more recent people mm-hmm. would remember.
Yeah.
Rod Erickson, Eric Barron, and now we have the first woman, Neely Vendipudi.
All right.
So there's been 19 presidents. The first person who was in charge of organizing the school and setting up curriculum was actually known as a principal, and that was William Waring. And he was the grandfather of Fred Waring and the Pennsylvanians.
Yes, okay.
So, yes, there's a lot of historical trivia as part of this, where the names came from, where some of the traditions come from. And here's my pitch for historical societies and museums, is the role of most historical societies and museums is that they preserve this information and share it, make it accessible, and help people understand exactly how important and how influential people and events and places in Center County were.
All right. We're going to take a break right here. Our guest is Jackie Esposito from the Center County Historical Society. And yes, streets and buildings. Streets. It's like, where does this come from? By the way, folks, please tell me you know that Beaver Avenue and Beaver Stadium are not named after a rodent. All right? Please tell me you know this. It was named after a person. James Beaver, correct? Yeah.
A former Pennsylvania governor. He was a Civil War general. He was president of the Board of Trustees.
All right. Let me stop you there because we got to take our break. We will come back with more right after this.
Finally, the soundtrack of summer is returning to the airwaves here in Happy Valley. And it's doing so right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. This year's
the
Pittsburgh
Center High
Pirates
Farm
offer
Store
a mix
is proud
of
to serve our
stars.
Community as a small family business. It provides big-time service. Folks, you can still stock up on those wood pellets this winter. The Center Hall Farm
and
Store
perhaps
has
baseball's
horse, cow,
newest
pig, chicken,
shiny
and bird
star.
Feeds. And has
the
a great variety of pet feeds for your
he
needs.
Got him and he's
open
done
weekdays
it again.
From 8 to 4 and Saturday from
Hall's
8 to noon. Check us out at 110 Allison Street, Center Hall. We're on the web.
Every game,
Hall
Farm Store.com brings the
promise
of new excitement.
The Bucks!
The Center County Recycling and Refuse Authority is proud to support local sports here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Check out our website at centercountyrecycling.org to enjoy the opportunities, upcoming events, the Jolly Roger, and details on what can and can't be recycled, as well as updated schedules. That's centercountyrecycles.org. Once again, the website is centercountyrecycles.org.
If you're like me, you have neighbors that have zero-turn mowers, and some are satisfied and others not so much. I've had neighbors come over while I'm mowing with my Kubota and want to try it out. I told Bob and Clyde, you need to get to Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64, for Kubota. I have a Z200 25 horsepower with the simplest operation and a pristine cut every time, even though I have a lawn and, shall we say, a challenging bank, ditch, and of course the wife's ornamental bushes. If you're trying to decide on a great lawn care machine, get to Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. At Daughter Equipment, they're experts on Kubota lawn care machines that keep you moving quickly and efficiently. Your destination for Kubota is Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. You may even meet my neighbors, Bob and Clyde.
No, it's not football season, folks. Just play along, all right? But it is history. Oh, it's always history season. All right, Scott here on Let's Talk. And again, I'm joined in studio by Jackie Esposito from the Center County Historical Society. And again, Jackie, you're doing this speech, I guess, or presentation on Sunday, which is maxed out. Now, first, this is, where is this happening again?
It's happening at the Center Furnace Mansion. It's happening at the Center Furnace Mansion at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a PowerPoint presentation about Penn State history through its presidents. It's looking at the influence in the history, some of the traditions, where things came from, like Nittany and why the university is where it is and what the influence the university has had on the Commonwealth and the nation and the world.
And it's maxed out, which apparently doesn't happen that often.
It depends on the topic. Yeah, right. It definitely is focused on the topic. But the Historical Society does a great many programs and does a lot of activities in the community. Like in May, we'll be having a garden show, and then there's always our Christmas sale in December. We're also in charge of the programs held out at the Boogersburg School on the way to the airport. The Historical Society supports other historical societies in the area. They're in a partnership with places like the Center County Library and Historical Museum in Bellefonte, the Andrew Curtin Mansion and Eagle Ironworks, the Aaronsburg Historical Museum, the Phillipsburg Historical Society. I worked, before I started with the Center County Historical Society, at the Penn State University Archives and Special Collections Library, which has a wonderful collection. There's the Columbus Chapel and Bowl Mansion, the Bowlesburg Historical Society, and the Pasto Ag Museum, which documents agricultural history in the county. All of these organizations tend to be small nonprofits with, you know, very small number of staff, but lots of volunteers and enthusiastic volunteers, people who appreciate the history and love the history and value hearing the voices from the past, you know, hearing the voices of the people who lived in Center County, the events that were important in Center County that made local and national news. I have a sports one for you.
Okay.
John Montgomery Ward, a Bellefonter, was a Penn State student. He was on the baseball team, so it's for this season. He is in the Baseball Hall of Fame and is credited with developing the curveball. He was kicked out of Penn State.
Oh, I didn't know that. All right.
He was kicked out of Penn State for stealing chickens.
You're kidding.
No.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
But he did go on to play both amateur and pro ball, and he's now noted in the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown.
For stealing
a local boy.
For stealing chickens? No,
for the curveball.
Why did he steal chickens?
I think it was a prank.
Oh.
Students at the university often do pranks.
No.
I've heard.
No.
I've been told.
Oh, boy. Okay. If folks want more information about the Center County Historical Society, what can they do?
The Center County Historical Society is housed in the Center Furnace Mansion right on College Avenue. You can check out our website. It is open to the public for tours, certain afternoons of the week, usually Fridays and Sundays. And it's open for research questions, 9 to 5. You can call or you can email.
There a website?
There is a website. There's a very nice website. And actually, one of the more important things that the Historical Society has done is created an online encyclopedia. So there's over 200 articles about people and places that have been important to Center County history. And it's an online encyclopedia, so it's constantly being updated. Mm-hmm. There are new articles added every month. And it gives you a snapshot right on the web of important activities in Center County.
I'm a new member recently. Obviously, you're looking for more members,
absolutely,
right?
Always.
Okay. So, folks, check that out. Now, you're an archivist. Now, Jackie, don't hate me, okay? I guess when I think of archives, I think about big, dusty buildings full of paper and files, and you're nodding your head.
It's the last 2 minutes of the Raiders of the Lost Ark is what you're thinking of.
Yes.
Yes, I know that. That's not what we are.
That's not what it is.
No.
Good.
No.
Okay.
No. Actually, what archives are repositories for both written documents as well as digital documents, like radio shows. And what we do is to acquire them, identify them, describe them so people can know what we have, and then make them accessible. So that if there is a diary, you know, your great-grandmother's diary, and she wrote about her time during World War I or World War II, or even just being a farmer's wife in central Pennsylvania and what that was like during droughts or panics, like the Panic of 1857, those documents are saved and preserved. Some of the challenges of doing that in a print world would be things like who can read cursive anymore. And then in a digital world, it's the obsolescence of technology. And so for like video and radio materials, it's the obsolescence of technology. We have to always keep up with technology.
Sure.
So it's a profession that focuses on saving the history, making sure it's here 100, 200 years from now, and that those voices don't get lost. I want people to be able to understand who Rebecca Pugh was. I mean, she was a grand dame of Bellefonte society, and she chose to marry Evan Pugh, who was Penn State's first president. They were only married for a short period of time because he died very young, and she remained a grand dame. She was actually active in the abolitionist movement. She blamed the college for his death, and so she only came back to the college twice, once for the dedication of the president's house because he designed it, and the other for the 50th anniversary. But she's got a wonderful story in and of herself. You mentioned James Beaver earlier, mm-hmm. after whom the stadium is named. He's a former Civil War general, governor of Pennsylvania, president of the Board of Trustees. He was an attorney. His wife was a major player in terms of how Bellefonte was established. She was on all of the societies, gardening societies and stuff in Bellefonte. An invitation to her house was extraordinarily valued. And she oftentimes sent people home with the recipes for the cookies that she had at her teas. So she's an amazing person. And I think if we don't recognize that these people existed and that they were important, even if they don't necessarily have an important title, then we've lost a lot of our own culture and history. And that's what archivists and other memory institution employees like librarians and museum curators, that's what we do. We make sure that none of those voices are lost, no matter how important, in air quotes, or unimportant they may seem. Their contributions have to be acknowledged and remembered.
So you don't know where the Ark of the Covenant is? Oh, no.
It's in the last 2 minutes of the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It's in a big box.
It's probably in Harrison Ford's garage.
That's
probably where it
That would make perfect sense, I think.
But it's one of those, you know, the way that librarians have buns, you know, women librarians have, you know, glasses and buns.
The hair, right.
Archivists have that last 2 minutes of Raiders of the Lost Ark that haunt us.
I never even thought of that, but yeah, okay, that'd be about right.
Yeah.
All right. In our remaining time, I just want to bounce around a little bit.
Sure.
Milton Eisenhower.
Yep.
Now, I had to look. I did a little prep work before we, you know, before this morning, and I didn't know my dates exactly. And I guess in the past, I just had this thought, okay, Milton Eisenhower became president of Penn State because his brother was president of the United States.
No. Actually, Milton is president of Penn State beginning in 1950. His brother doesn't become president of the United States until 1952. Prior to being president of Penn State, he was president at Kansas State. And then he leaves Penn State, becomes president of Johns Hopkins. Now, he is president of Penn State while his brother is president, and they are able to make a couple of deals. You know, it's kind of nice to know people in high places. Dwight Eisenhower was very interested in finding out what peace uses could be used for nuclear reaction. And so he arranged with Milton to have the first academic nuclear reactor placed at Penn State. It's now the oldest operating educational nuclear reactor on campus. In exchange, Milton had wanted to change the name of town. He did not like the name State College. He thought it was too colloquial. He thought it was too old-fashioned. He wanted the name to be called University Park. And it went to a vote, and he was voted down. And he was kind of very upset about it.
Wait, went to a vote of whom?
The college citizens, the township citizens.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. So local vote. And so he called his brother, and he asked his brother if he could have a post office on campus, because you can name post offices anything you want to name them. And his brother gave him a post office. He named that post office University Park. It's the post office that's right next to the Student Union building on campus, and it is called University Park. It was worked at for many years by the famous Mike the Mailman, who was in there. And so in exchange for the post office, Dwight got his nuclear reactor, and they had other things. The other things the two that brothers did here in town was to fish. They both love fly fishing.
Oh.
And so Dwight came up several times to fly fish with his brother.
Interesting. All right. I have been to the reactor, although it's been a bunch of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew a little bit about the history of the reactor. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, okay.
We're actually, Penn State is actually in negotiations now for a second one, because the first one has been so successful, and the research that comes out of it has been so useful. Back about 10, 15 years ago when there was the nuclear reactor problem in Japan, Penn State was the one that was contacted to help them make some decisions about how to deal with the effects of what the tsunami had done to the nuclear reactor.
Fukushima, yeah. Okay, I didn't know that. All right. Yeah. And that reactor would have been here, what, 70 years now?
Absolutely.
Long time. Yeah. Wow, okay.
It's the oldest educational nuclear reactor here.
All right, now I've been here for 40 years.
Okay.
And so Bryce George is the first president that I remember, and met him, interviewed him, you know, all that stuff. And yes, 1989, it was what, like the first week of December, we all go over to the Beaver Stadium where they're going to make this announcement that, excuse me, Penn State's joining the Big Ten, you know, boom! I mean, that was a monolithic story that he, now, do you know, what was his involvement with that? Did he come up with the idea? Was he involved?
Oh, no, he did not come up with the idea. The Big Ten had been, actually many conferences had been mooing Penn State for a while, and Joe Paterno traditionally did not want to join the big conferences. But the Big Ten proved to be a very attractive suitor, and Penn State agreed to join the Big Ten, and for many years was the furthest east Big Ten school in the conference until Maryland and Rutgers joined. But it actually has two facets. So when you join the Big Ten, you join the athletic conference, but there's also an academic conference. And the nice thing about the academic conference is it was a consortium of all these other schools, well-named, well-known, well-appreciated research universities. And so it helped Penn State to rise in those levels as well, which was something that was really important to Bryce Jordan.
Yeah, I could tell.
Yeah.
I mean, he, you know, they named the Jordan Center after him, which is perfectly appropriate, because.
Well, I think he probably would have preferred a music building named after him. He was a musicologist by training.
I didn't know that. All right. There's something I learned. Okay. Now, today, Dr. Neely Bendapudi, first woman, obviously. A question I was started to ask you during our last break. Obviously, right now, the university is going through money issues. What about branch campuses? We got to cut spending, cutting budgets, and yada, yada, yada. In 170 years of history, Jackie, has any other Penn State president had to deal with problems like this? Because, again, my frame of reference goes back to Bryce Jordan, so 40 years. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't recall any of this. You go back all the way to the start. Did any past presidents deal with, I don't know, big-time financial issues like this?
Almost all of them.
All of them.
Actually, between Evan Pugh and George Atherton, the five presidents between were always on the brink of having to close the college because there was not enough money. There is a long-standing tradition of not receiving the amount of money from the state legislature that they expected. They, the land grant endowment had never paid off the way that it was expected, so that the university has always depended on large-scale donations. And as a matter of fact, George Atherton was the first president to actually go out and recruit donors. He went and talked to Charles Schwab and Carnegie, James Carnegie, and he knew that they didn't like one another, but they were both big steel magnates in Pennsylvania, and he said to them, I need buildings. And so Carnegie agreed to build a library, because that's what he was doing with his money. He was building libraries. Schwab agreed to build what he believed was going to be a chapel. It turned out to be an auditorium. They were building their buildings at the same time because they didn't care for one another. Carnegie's building is wider and Carnegie's building is taller. Schwab's building is wider. And Schwab made sure his building opened 4 months before Carnegie's building opened so he could be first. Carnegie at the time had taken his wife on a European tour, and I think Carnegie probably had a better marriage, but Schwab's building opened first. But those were the first two privately fundraised facilities, and it was important because that had to happen. There had to be money from external donors in order to keep the university afloat. There were other times of financial troubles, usually around the wars. During World War I, the federal government actually came in and took over the university properties for training, for military training. During World War II, the Curtis Air Cadets were trained here at Penn State. There have been a great many financial crises. Now, that said, from about the mid post-World War II, there was an attempt to at least develop a financial cushion in case that, you know, there were times when the finances didn't come up to what the expenditures were. And I think what we're seeing now is that those cushions no longer are as stable as they at one point were because of economic fluctuations like the crash in 2008. The first crash the university had to deal with was 1857. We were in the process of building Old Main. There was a panic and we couldn't finish building it. And they decided to open it anyway because they wanted to keep interest of people coming to Penn State, at that time the Farmers High School. And so the university has unfortunately always had financial problems and had to depend on donations from external sources, whether that was the Grange that helped build the women's dormitories, or fraternities that built houses on campus for students to live in, or big private donors, you know, like the Schreiers or the Pagulas, who have donated to help support the university. That's more of the history of the university than not.
So two rich guys got into a little personal competition with buildings.
Yes.
Maybe we should try that today. Hey, Bezos, say Musk. Come over here, build buildings. All right, come on.
Oh, as a historian, I'm old-fashioned about that. Back in the day, buildings were only named for people after they died, and they had to have done something truly significant. And that changed in the 90s when buildings could be named for donors and stuff. But you'll see buildings on campus that are named for people you might not – like many of the dorms are named for World War I veterans. Not famous, not wealthy, but named for World War I veterans because it was important to acknowledge the Penn Staters who had participated in the war. So naming opportunities have been different over time.